Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
Well, this is episode number 145 with Patty Alpert. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer, and I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Patty Alpert, we explore a number of interesting topics like how to teach to work. And this is her blueprint for a project-based mentoring program, which really helps you understand how to connect kids that have passions about solving interesting problems with experts in the field. It's a fascinating work. And so we talk about the perceptions of the skills gap, what can be done with this gap, how corporations can better align with schools, and what that partnership could look like. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show's sponsors. I'd like to share an incredible free resource for the better leaders that listen to this podcast. It's the Top 10 Fundraising Ideas for 2018, and that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you'll get the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018 when you download it at schoolzonepodcast.com. A lot of school leaders talk about improving students' soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Hey there, better leaders. I'm excited to connect with a new author on the show, Patty Alpert, who is a board member of both the Network for Teaching Entrepreneurship and the US 2020, the White House Initiative to Build Mentorship in STEM Careers. Drawn from her 15 years of mentoring inner city high school students, her proven project-based mentorship model provides an intuitive and scalable way to transform education inside high schools, community colleges, universities, and after-school programs. She is also the author of the new book, Teach to Work, How a Mentor, a Mentee, and a Project Can Close the Skills Gap in America. Welcome to the show, Patty.
Thank you for having me, Dan. I'm looking forward to a deep conversation with you. Got my coffee here and I'm ready to rock.
Ready to rock. Yes, that's great. And you know, we connected in the pre-chat where you're at and where I'm at. And so I've had a number of coffees by this time. And who knows when the listener is listening in. They might be having their first cup or their 10th. Hopefully not a 10th cup, but we'll just see. So, you know, the title of your book, Teach to Work, How a Mentor, a Mentee, and a Project Can Close the Skills Gap in America is very interesting. And I think where I'd like to start is just the idea of the skills gap. And how would you define it?
You know, it's such an interesting term. And there's many narratives that sort of circle around it. The first one is there are no more jobs. Where are they? They're overseas. They're lost to competition, automation, globalization. There's another narrative that says there are jobs, but there are no skilled workers. I mean, I have hosts of research. The Manufacturers Association says by 2025, there will be 2 million jobs left unfulfilled because there's not enough high-tech education. 3,000 business executives every year attend the GE Global Innovation Barometer. And this is a message to all of us. Their biggest concern is that education is misaligned with business needs. They're sort of unemployed, underemployed, and unemployable. And then there's a third narrative that says sometimes educators just aren't preparing youth for the skills that are constantly changing, that are required. Gallup did a huge, largest representative study of its kind. 98% of chief academic officers believe they are preparing kids for the workforce, yet only 11% of corporations concurred. So that's a gap. And it kind of leads to these questions. What can be done to prepare youth for tomorrow's jobs? Whose responsibility is it to help bridge this skills gap? What is this new culture of innovation? Can corporations play a role? Can they align better with educators? Will educators receive them? And the biggest one is, what would a partnership look like? And that speaks to the book title and the idea of a project. I'm not usually this organized when I talk, but it kind of leads right to it.
Yeah, I would say keep it going. You sound very organized right now. And those questions were very, very clear in terms of what can be done, whose responsibility is it, what's the new culture of innovation, can corporations align better with schools, and what would a partnership look like? Did I get those correctly?
You did. You know, I just wrote an article for a think tank, an education think tank here in the Washington, D.C. area. They asked me, from an educator's point of view, to kind of first begin and talk about how would an educator even call on or invite businesses in their communities to come talk.
Sure.
And, you know, I kind of spelled out what I would call a listening tour. Believe it or not, though, this is self-serving, I have to admit, but I could call it something like a teach to work listening tour. Because it would be very fascinating, and everybody would learn if some of the walls were torn down. And if one called a neighboring business, three or four or five, to come in and sit down over coffee and say, look, where is your business heading? What are the skills that you need? How can we better prepare our youth for your needs? Because that's where it's all heading. Just to break down some of the silos and listen, I think would be a great first step.
Yeah, you know, and I think about my previous roles as a school leader, and I'm curious, I'm considering my colleagues as well, that they feel some level of, I guess, being overwhelmed, right, with just the day-to-day operations of a school. And now we're opening up a can of worms, so to speak, that maybe we're not preparing kids like we say we are, right? You mentioned earlier in the interview the gap between chief academic officers' perceptions of our preparing of kids and then CEOs running businesses.
Right.
And when that overwhelm creeps in, you know, what can we do? What can we say to school leaders in terms of starting these relationships? Because it's important. We need to be intentional. But what are some of those first steps?
So that's what I was just sort of alluding to. The first step in any building any new relationship is to listen, to understand where you're heading. In the articles that I've written, and I'm happy to have them link up for you,
sure.
I've described, for instance, like I do my own listening tour. I was at the Aspen Institute's Ideas Festival this summer, and I was listening to Astro Teller. He is the chief innovation officer at Google. And just listening to him describe his culture of innovation, I wrote about any idea. It was fascinating. He talked about having a culture of raging optimism and scathing paranoia. Ideas are, it has to be a huge problem, like a global problem.
Right.
There has to be a radical solution. And there has to be, on their part, a technological breakthrough. And he suggests that 99% of ideas that they throw against the wall fail. But they have a failing party. They come together and literally toast failure because they don't want to keep working on something that isn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just sort of take that concept of innovation, what can we learn from that? So I'm just sort of throwing out ideas to think about. But Dan, so how I've come to this, I just should share with you. I have a business background, and I've kind of now crossed over. I have a family foundation, and through my philanthropy have come to this organization called the Network for Teaching Entrepreneurship. And while there, I created a role for myself first, back in 2001, to take my business knowledge and try to play an adjunct role to teachers who teach entrepreneurship, with the thinking that, my God, I've toiled with blood, sweat, and tears for 12 years building this company. Maybe I could add some interest, motivation, real life experience to what the kids were learning in their textbooks and from their teachers. So I actually created this role, was a guinea pig for a year, and defined a role for a business person, most importantly to your ears, that wouldn't interrupt the teacher. But every single student in that class had a project. And their project was to develop a master plan for a business of their interest. So the overarching assignment was come up with a plan, whatever you want to do. And as mentors, what I designed was we would come in and coach kids on their ideas, push back, play around with the reality of the idea. And ultimately, and I actually had a fellow come in with me. He's a Harvard MBA, so it's always good to have smarter people around you, right?
Absolutely.
We would help these kids actually launch companies. They took the idea and they did it. And it became profitable. And in their plan, they had to write there what was the problem they were solving, what was the objective, who was their audience, what was their forecasting, what was the cycle monthly of their forecasting, profit and loss, market strategy, and then the price points. And they did it. I mean, they did it. And it was a long-term project. So what I witnessed, and this is now, I'm in my 18th year of doing that, helping kids write business plans and launch companies. When I first read this Gallup study, it so resonated with me. And the letters from the students that I get of having sort of somebody else outside their normal adult relationships, these all kind of converge together that this is a good idea. And I'll just share this quickly with you. In Gallup's study, and it's called Great Lives, Great Jobs Study, their overarching question is, how can we best prepare youth for real-world jobs? That was the basis of their study. And they came away with two huge outcomes. One is that all students need the attention one-on-one of an adult. That can either be a professor or a mentor. And two, that they apply their learning in two ways to a long-term project. So that to me is not just a visit. That's working on something over time.
Mm-hmm.
And to do an internship, to apply their learning to something they're doing. So when I read Gallup's study, I first read about it in the New York Times. And then I actually, this fellow wrote my foreword. Brandon Busteed is the director of education and workforce development for Gallup, who conducted the study. It was precisely what I had experienced one-on-one working with these students. They were miles, leaps ahead of others. And they had something to put on their resume. I mean, I have students, why I had to write the book. I have students, even in my chapter 11, my last chapter, who I'm still in touch with. This is now, some of them are 15, 16 years later. And they're productive, they're curious, they're interested, have created more mentorships in their life, and many are actually giving back.
Yeah. in you know, I think it just shows the fruit, right, of the work you've done by planting those seeds and giving kids interesting problems to solve through what I heard is actually launching a business. They had this fantastic experience where the project, the learning became authentic for them. They were chasing after some type of problem and building this business that mattered. And then they kept ties with you to check in and let you know how they're doing. And now you see them also giving back, which is a really beautiful thing. And going way back, you know, a few minutes ago when we first started talking here, you were talking about Google's culture of innovation.
Right.
And that they start with this idea of a huge problem. And I think I've read or I've heard somewhere that, you know, for Google really to try to address a problem, it has to be a problem that at least a billion people face.
Exactly.
And the scale of that, like the scariness of that, I think is something we can learn from Google and incorporate into schools, because I don't think we play big enough or dream big enough for our students. And a lot of times it's kept in these manageable, worksheets and small problems that are so uninspiring and don't challenge kids to really apply themselves. But if we took
that... kids are so smart.
Sure.
They have all kinds of ideas in some form. My concept for the book is to take it way beyond just business.
Right.
Like, that happens to fit for me because that's my background. But there's no reason you take a kid in a science world or a technology world that if they come up with something that they see missing in the real world, they come up with it. And I have examples. I can share with you, you know, examples.
Yeah.
But they come up with the idea, then they're driven. And then they have this adult mentor who's from the field. So to me, there's no reason a scientist or a technologist or IT or, you know, a filmmaker or artist, they all can be mentors. And my other sort of big message to educators is businesses are dying to do this.
Right.
I say that from so many perspectives right now. I've sat in the middle of a Secretary of Education, a Secretary of Labor, with this same question. Secretary of Labor says, I have tons of businesses that want to roll. I've interviewed maybe 10 corporations, big, huge, both global and domestic corporations. And they have a litany of reasons. This is actually a surprise to me in doing the research. But the main goal is they want to build a pipeline. They are not finding the kinds of applicants that they want. So they're stepping up. They want a role. So it's sort of like opening the doors a little and listening and letting them, is there a role for them to play? And so I have one little answer to this, but if there was a mentorship model, that's what I've tried to describe. Particularly the project fits in the wheelhouse of the mentor, and it's a defined role. It's a defined role where essentially the student is responsible for the idea. They are the driver of the activity and the execution. But the mentor helps with the master plan, with the strategy for overcoming obstacles, for dealing with the timeline, like doing a master plan, how do you keep with the timeline? And ultimately, and this is huge in learning, I'm sure you have experienced this as well, they have to give an oral defense.
This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. So something, Patty, that really interests me about what you're doing with these projects, I'm hearing that a student is inspired by a problem they want to solve, And then what the school leaders, the listeners need to hear is that you match it with an able adult that it's in their wheelhouse. It's they're serving out of their strengths. And a lot of times we put people in a position just because they're a warm body. But this flips it on its head. It's really knowing who wants to serve the school and putting them in a place of strength. And then the oral defense comes at the end, where it just makes it a little more authentic for the student to talk about the execution of the project and maybe the biggest lessons that they learned.
So you have it exactly right. The good news is for educators is there is an enormous treasure trove of knowledge, skilled practitioners in our universe that have time. They're ready, willing, and able. Right, those are big business terms. They're ready, willing, and able. And here's just a few sort of data points to draw from. There are 78 million baby boomers who want to stay in their knowledge base. They don't want to become irrelevant. They want community connection. And this does that. It gives them, it's a win-win. You have retirees like from 3M. It's an example I have studied in the book. Where they have what they call ambassadors, people who have enormous knowledge in manufacturing and product development, and they go out and they are ambassadors using their relevant knowledge and helping the next generation. You have congregants in churches who, you know, they want to give back and they have all kinds of skills. And then you have corporations, and I have talked to many for the corporate social responsibility departments. And in my book and on my blogs, I've interviewed SAP and Accenture and Ernst & Young, Comcast, 3M, MasterCard. They the litany of reasons of why they want to come have a role, the biggest being they want to close the skills gap because they cannot find the applicants that they're looking for. So by going through some sort of creating a structure in the school to receive mentors and take on this sort of mentoring role based on a project, it can apply to any field. You just match, as you've just described, you match the content, the class content. And I have a diagram of this in the book, sort of sciences to sciences, but it can go way beyond that. Like, here's a fun little silly example. There was a young woman who was in the sciences but took an advertising class. And this was in, I think, community college. And she knew friends from college that were all around Europe for their junior year. She wasn't, but they were. And she was taking this advertising class, and it totally changed her scope of what she wanted to do. Tom's Shoes put out a request to the school to come up with an idea to develop an ad campaign internationally. So she pulled all of her people that she knew that were traveling and asked them to lay down on the ground and put their feet up next to a monument in their photograph. So picture, 19-year-old laying on the ground with her feet up with the Eiffel Tower in the background. And she asked them to send them all into her by a certain date. So she had Tom's Shoes from all over the world. And she submitted it, and she won. She won a big award. And now she's like, wants to be in advertising because it was sort of a need she saw, a challenge she met, and she got all excited and she got to be creative and she had guidance from an advertising executive. So, I mean, there's lots of creative ways. Here would be another example. This is more generic, but SAP has stepped up through a nonprofit, which is another means to do this. Every student was asked to design an app based on their knowledge. Let's say somebody wanted to do an app for cyberbullying. or an app for recipes. It could be the subject that the kid wants, but the technology application is tutored along from the SAP employees, and they've committed 750 hours to doing that. So I'm just giving you sort of examples of how it might apply.
That's great too, to hear, you know, some of those real world examples. I really like that Tom's one as well, because I can only think from the student's perspective, right? Ultimately winning that contest, but seeing the work that she did, right, make a difference, probably in people's lives and with the company, all of a sudden, you know, opened her up to advertising too. What a really neat experience.
And if you take this further, now she has something she's excited about to write on a resume and to write on a college application, something that was her own accomplishment. It's the real deal, you know?
Absolutely. Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. So, Patty, I'm just curious, before, you know, we kind of enter the close and wrap up the interview, is there anything else you want to share with the listeners in terms of your book, Teach to Work, or, you know, closing the skills gap through this project-based mentoring program you have?
Well, there's two things I want to say. The first is, if I have the time, I believe that this mentoring model is unique and important. It carries with it six characteristics that I think are sort of more soft skills, but are hugely important, particularly for the kid. It's a different form of adult relationship. And if you would indulge me, I'm just going to share these with you.
Yeah, please.
The first message from the kid, from the adult to the kid, is if I did it, if I made it through all the bumps in the road, I know you can too. It's a subliminal message, but as to the mentee, we as mentors are a tangible, accessible example for success. Two, I'm here to help. You can count on me and I'll be back. To a kid, you're showing you're reliable and that you do what you say. Three, through working together on a project, you begin to give some direction. It's soft directions because it's their project, but it's saying, here's how, now you try. For the youth, that's the beginning of skills development. I mean, I've sat and helped kids learn how to conduct an interview or keep a timeline or even developing a master plan, but it's a beginning of skills development. Four, when you ask these thought-provoking questions, you begin to play the devil's advocate. So for your student, they experience a new form of adult give and take intergenerationally. They've never had that kind of rapport with an adult figure generally. And this is my favorite. I never sit down with a student without saying this first. I'm not your judge. I'm not grading you. I'm not your boss. I'm not your teacher. I'm not your parent. I'm a new kind of adult relationship. Call me a consultant around your ideas, but the most important thing to the student, you can reject my suggestions because this is your project. So to the mentee, they're learning a new collaboration, a gentle accountability, and a sense of ownership. Mm. And lastly, by just listening, our very behavior says to that mentee, you are important. I want to hear what you have to say. And I believe that through that kind of listening, they gain a certain sense of self-esteem and motivation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I, I think those begin to form that sort of special bond. It's very student-centered. So I hope that begins, that gives you some idea of sort of the inside that relationship and why it's unique.
Well, I like, you know, where you ended there, that it is, it's a new relationship, you know. Like you said, I'm not the teacher, I'm not your boss, et cetera, et cetera. I'm this adult that's in your life consulting you. And really, I'm here just to cheer you on, to help you be successful, learn from your mistakes.
And you're in that field. You're in the field of an their expert. Level of interest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're an expert in that area. And the other key thing too, and I want to point this out, by the time this airs, the mastermind will have already read this book, but we're currently digging into Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. And he's a CIA operative and hostage negotiator. But as the but he, something that your mentors do that he teaches is this idea of allowing somebody to say no. You know, a lot of times in negotiation or influence, we're taught to go for the yes. He actually says no, go for the no. Because when you do that, and in this case with the student, feel free to reject these ideas. You're sharing, I have so much confidence as an expert, I only want you to succeed. But ultimately, this is your project. You can say no to whatever you want. And when you give people that ability to say no to ideas, they're more open to receiving right. what you have to say, because you've said, listen, this is your thing. I want you to win, but ultimately it's with you, your decision. So that's just a really neat point I want to pull out for the listeners, but a great thing that you and the mentors use through your program.
And how often does a student get treated that way, really? How often do they get ownership?
Only in the most special places, unfortunately. I think a lot of the listeners to the show try to create those type of environments, but it's definitely not par for the course.
Oh, and from a stranger, you know, from a, this sort of, I mean, we've all had mentors in our lives. I guess ultimately why I had to write this book is I wanted to add some rigor and some best practices and a job description. This is very project-based, a job description that fits in the wheelhouse and that brings some value to the student. So it adds more structure. And I believe that the business world, anybody in the business world, A, works from a project understanding.
Yeah.
And B, wants a definite, what do you want me to do here? What's my goal? What's the business? What's the beginning, middle, and end? What's my role? So that's what I'm trying to do, is define that in and make it sort of broad enough that it can fit into any field.
Well, you've definitely done that. And all the listeners know that in the show notes, we'll have mm-hmm. your work linked up, Teach to Work. And there they can get, you know, the playbook to creating a wonderful project-based mentorship program that will really add value to the students' lives, being able to solve these interesting problems, utilizing people that operate within their strengths and are experts in the field that the students care about, and then helps close the skills gap in the U.S. as well.
Bingo.
School leadership is hard work. Why should funding student-centered programs be difficult too? If you're stressed about your budget and where you'll find some extra cash to run a great program for kids, I have a solution for you. Introducing the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018. In this guide, you will find the best school fundraising ideas available in 2018. My favorite company described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending brings hassle-free fundraising to schools through custom sticker vending machines installed in your school. The best part, you do absolutely no work. The School Spirit Vending team installs, maintains, and shares the revenue collected with the school. You can learn more about School Spirit Vending and the other magnificent companies mentioned in the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Go there now, download the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2018 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, Patty, just to close, a couple fun questions. What do you do for fun?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I go to Colorado and I play a lot of golf and I hike. And I'm very fortunate to be sort of a member of that Aspen Institute. So there's Like, I went to a 3-day class this summer on Leonardo da Vinci. It was so cool. What a curious man. I'll give a plug to Walter Isaacson, who just came out with his new book.
Yeah.
Mid-October. Oh, my God. It was just fascinating, particularly having written my book. Mm. Just this unlimited curiosity this man had pre-everything. So that was great fun. So physical and mental, how's that?
Absolutely. And if you could be automatically good at anything, Patty, what would it be?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I would sing. I so wish I could sing, but it's not in this lifetime. I'm an appreciator of music to the nth degree, but I wasn't blessed.
That's okay. And Patty, I'd like to close with this idea. If you could put a message on all school marquees across the globe just for a day, what would that message say?
Oh, geez. I guess it would say, teaching is a part of mankind, and passing it on is the best blessing that we can give and that we can get. So sort of tear down your walls and listen and learn.
I appreciate that. To me, I hear legacy too, which is, I think, embedded in the Teach to Work text as well. This idea of what we give back and how that continues to pay it forward throughout our lives and in society. Well, Patty, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Any more parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
My website is www.teachtowork.com. Love to hear from folks. I'd love to hear them deploying this project-based mentoring model and share it with me. I've got a lot of schools that are doing this, and I'm sort of interviewing them, so I'm wanting to spread the word. So let's share best practices.
All right. So again, listeners, the Teach to Work book and website will be linked up for you in the show notes. And Better Leaders, thanks for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember, life's 10% of what happens to you, 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Patty. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Patty in the search bar. Show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Patty, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you, Dan. It was great to talk to you.
Better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.